My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? And if you're straight, why the heck are you so obsessed with us? Today we have someone that all the gays are obsessed with, Brittany Bateman from The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And yeah, we love her because she's a camp queen on the show, but also she's a Broadway beach. So please enjoy, yes, the housewives tea, but also the theater kiki. This is Brittany Bateman.
That's a Gay Ass Podcast welcomes Brittany Bateman, and we as theater queens and housewives stans are celebrating this big day here. Brittany, I want to thank you for giving us your gorgeous presence and being such a goddamn queen.
Oh my gosh, Eric, you're making me so happy. You're so sweet. Thank you. You're making me blush.
Oh, listen, and the blushing will continue because you not only have been doing such amazing television work on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake, but you also have a theater past, and we as Broadway queens need to first talk about Miss Saigon. How could we not?
Yeah.
There's a bootleg of you and Will Swenson, and yes, you are singing the most perfectly placed Chris, What's Haunting You. Are you currently warmed up? Do you think that at some point during this interview, we can get a full pingy masky? Chris, what's haunting you?
Oh my gosh. I won't ever sound as good as you. Listen to you.
Girl, I cracked, like how you, but thank you.
The throwback moment. That was amazing.
My voice is a little tired from screaming at gay men last night, but what else is new, Brittany?
What did you do last night?
I was at a party, but it did sound like I was chastising a group of gays. No, I was at a gay party in LA that was full of queens. And I'm not just saying this to butter your biscuit. I told many of them I was about to interview you, and every single one gave me a gay gasp. You are truly really beloved by the gay commune, truly.
Oh, I cannot be. That is the ultimate compliment, really. It is the ultimate compliment.
Well, gays have the best taste. And so I think that
they do.
We do. And I think that the fact that you're here, we're going to get into so much of your herstory, whether it is the theater of it all, the housewives of it all. But since, you know, this podcast likes to talk to our allies about your herstory with gay people, I want to get straight into that question, which is, Brittany Bateman, who was your first gay? What was the entree into you loving and being loved by us homosexuals?
Oh my gosh, it would have had to be 1989, really. I mean, I grew up in like a suburb of Sacramento, Northern Cal. So I think at that time period, there were probably out there, but weren't out. You know what I mean?
Of course, but you sort of like inherently.
And there was a stigma. And there was actually a rumor in going around the school that I was gay, but I didn't know. I really didn't know that. And everyone treated me like I had leprosy. And I didn't
because
know.
Because they thought you were gay. What do you think it was that made them gay? Why did they think that about you? Were you like wearing a chunky boot?
I could trace it back to this. I really don't know. I think it was just someone trying to be mean and bully me. I was a cheerleader and I don't know. I mean, I thought I had it going on, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, no one would come around me. No, if I would like touch someone on the shoulder, they would like, and I was like,
ugh.
I literally started hiding in the bathrooms during lunch. And I would go into the library during lunchtime and just read like teen magazine and like hide in the corner so no one would see me eating my lunch by myself in the library.
Oh my God. That's like the saddest.
But that's a testament to how much people go through or went through Thank heavens it's not like that anymore. But I experienced gay bullying and I wasn't even gay. It was just a rumor.
Truly, no one is spared from mean kids. And I think it's funny that you think about like Sacramento as a place, like, sure, it's like on the West Coast. It's supposed to be progressive because you think about only certain parts of the country being either homophobic or whatever. But it's like, no, anywhere you are, it can happen. And I think that it's... cool to think about, though, that you were even a part of the gay experience, not even being one of us gays. Were you a musical theater queen also in high school? Were you doing the musicals then too?
Yeah. Yeah, I was in high school.
Give us some of the roles. Give us some of the Brittany Bateman starring roles in high school.
You know, not necessarily in high school, I would say. I mean, I played like Nancy and Oliver, and my mom was Nancy. And, you know, that was the first time I played Nancy and Oliver. Wait, no, I played Bette, her little sidekick. But it was mostly just like I played Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. I was really, really bullied. Like, you don't understand. Like, it really beat me down to have that rumor. And then by the time I was a senior, so I was really shy. It made me really, I've not told this story yet. No one has asked me this question. I have not. You're the very first person, Eric, that I've ever told this story to.
It's an honor.
But
truly.
Anyway, by the time I was a senior, somebody finally told me. And so the very next the next time I was a cheerleader at the next game, I walked in holding a guy's hand, you know, and then everyone treated me normally after that. Like it did that one thing. Like, I had a boyfriend and he showed up with me, walked in holding hands, and then everything was right with the world after that.
Well, listen.
Which is so wrong. It's so wrong.
I agree. But it's also like, not to get too therapist psychological tress about it, but I think in a way, maybe like that's partly why we learn where to attribute our value. And like, I think that so many parts of society think that people who are in relationships are like either more secure or more complete. And I think that that's just like a myth that's been taught to us. And I think maybe, you know, you have such a spotlight on you with The Real Housewives, and obviously the Jared of it all, people love to talk about incessantly. But I think like people have always been zoomed into your relationship status and even your sexuality. We're learning that it's like, it's hard for you to sort of separate your feelings about yourself based on what other crazy shit people are saying. So it's let's celebrate how you are continuing to fly the Britney flag, no matter what crazy shit people say.
You're so sweet. And then my first actual gay experience was with my cast when I was 19, my first job, the very first job I was ever hired for at all was at Opryland USA. And that was when that existed. The theme park doesn't exist anymore, but I was a theme park girly for a summer. And that was my first introduction to, you know, the gay population. And I had so many questions and I got so many answers, you know, they were just the kindest, best people in the world. And then of course the rest is history. I've just, you know, In every cast.
I'm sure. I mean, listen, for anybody who doesn't know that's watching, Brittany has, like I mentioned, did the national tour of Miss Saigon, which is huge because producer Nathaniel and I were in the chorus of Miss Saigon at the St. Louis Muni as teenagers all of 58 years ago. So Miss Saigon is near and dear to our hearts. I think that show is, I saw it on Broadway with Ava Noblezada. There's the documentary of, the auditions for Miss Saigon. And I cannot love that show more. You did also, you performed at Disney World as Ariel and Belle. Huge. You at BYU played Reno Sweeney in Anything Goes. You did shows at Tokyo Disneyland. I mean, clearly, performance aside, you've known a lot of gay guys. But if we get into the vocals of it all, Brittany, your voice is stunning. And I'm so excited that people get to see your cabaret in just like a month in New York City. It's called What About Me? It's at 54 Below. My husband, I'm in LA, but my husband will be in New York. And guess what? He bought tickets to your show, so he will be there. So I just need to let you know that.
What night? What night will he be there? I'm gonna watch for him.
Don't know, but I will message you and tell you exactly when he'll be
there. Find out, because I want to take a video of him with
him. Oh, please. He loves to be on camera. The question though is, if we get into the singing of it all, you train very hard as a singer, but Lisa Barlow on your cast tends to love to give us a vocal. How do you, Brittany, feel about Lisa Barlow's voice?
Oh gosh, you're gonna ask me that. Can I plead the fifth?
You can plead whatever you want, Brittany. This is a space of support, so I would never make you say anything you don't want to say.
I know. Okay, this is what I think about it. I think that she has a beautiful tone. She has a beautiful tone. It's kind of husky. It sounds just like Lisa with her beautiful husky tone, and I'll leave it at that.
Beautifully said, Brittany. That was just haunting, really. beautiful gowns, beautiful gowns. You are currently, yes, getting ready for this show, but we're also watching The Housewives season air in real time, which is probably a pretty interesting experience for you. What has it been like to prepare for this 54 Below show while also seeing people dissect your relationship with your kids, with the rest of the cast? Have you been able to handle sort of the roller coaster of all that?
It's hard. There have been nights that I watch the show and I'm just like, it's not so much what happens in the show, because that I remember, I was there, but it's what people like watch What Happens Live. It was really hard to listen to Bronwyn throw shade on me about my being the worst dressed in the cast. You know what I mean? It's like, I just feel like I'm everyone's punching bag. I'm the butt of all the jokes. And it's just kind of getting old. There's only so much I can sort of just laugh off and say, well, it isn't true, so it doesn't hurt my feelings. But at the same time, I'm like, dang, you know, I've been saying really nice things about Bronwyn in the press. And can she really not say anything nice? And then Sarah Paulson was like kind of not being nice to me too. This is last week's episode. And I was just like, ouch. Like, these people don't know me then, I guess. I mean, what's not to love? I don't understand. I'm quirky and I'm weird, but like, why be mean? I don't know. I don't get it.
I think that you're speaking to a bigger thing though, which is that people right now have sort of forgotten that there are real human beings on the other side of what you're saying. And I think that you have a quote that you told Newsweek that really, really struck me, and especially as like a gay podcast, it really struck. You said, "The best advice I've ever been given is to be authentically myself. The people-pleasing part only causes us to downgrade our emotional state and our emotional intelligence. It doesn't serve anybody, and people will still hate us anyway. So why not be hated for exactly who you are?" And you, Brittany, of course it hurts because you're a human being, but I think that you can at least fall asleep at night knowing that you're being authentic and that nobody can take that away from you, and that you love yourself, and that does not then give the power to the people who are shitting on you, whether it's an interview or online or otherwise.
Well, can I just take this mic and drop it? Because that was like mic drop.
It
drop
looks expensive, you, but so don't drop
said,
it. But
you said that so more, much more eloquently than I have ever said that.
I think it should be
a screenshot on TikTok, you know?
Let's go, girl. I'm not on Housewives, but I have been shit on the internet. I recently posted a Halloween costume of the dad from Inside Out, and almost 10 million people called me ugly on Twitter. And what? It was a freak accident.
What was your costume again?
You know the movie Inside Out, the Pixar animated movie? Yeah. There's the girl, Riley, is like the little girl in the movie, and her dad has like a same facial hair that I have. And I have been told I sort of look like him. Some gay guys also think they have a crush on him, and there's like a photo of him that they manufactured to make him look like he's like a heavy bulge, we'll call it. So I thought a funny joke would be I dress up as him with the big bulge for Halloween. It's silly, right? I posted it. I thought it was funny, maybe a little
very
thirsty.
Britney-esque. Who cares?
Thank you. What about me? And I posted it to Twitter mistakenly. And the next thing I know, it was like a bunch of like 20-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 22-year-olds just like telling me that my hairline is too high. I'm too ugly. I'm old. I'm chopped. And it ended up going from like a few people to like millions of people seeing it. And I sit now like really, thank you. But I actually like, I think it's going to be now a funny part of my memoir. Like it feels like it was already a year ago and it was like a week and a half ago, but it's just I bring this up to say that like people really love to say hateful shit on the internet, and sometimes we just have to say, why are you so obsessed with me?
what? I most of the time, 99.9% have the positive attitude, like, hey, whatever, if, you know, they don't know me, or it rolls off easily. But there are some times.
Oh, I'm sure.
It just gets to you. And like,
well, you have to have a really,
and,
oh yeah,
that got to me. But yeah, I can see why you'd have that attitude. Just like, hey, c'est la vie. I mean, say
right,
what you
but
want.
But not to take away from how you feel. I definitely felt crazy and hurt for a minute. And then I was able to, like, you know, talk about it in therapy and, like, yeah, eat my Ben and Jerry's. And, you know, I personally, love a marijuana moment that yeah, I absolutely leaned into. And so it's like we all do what That's we can amazing. To feel connected to yeah, our higher vibration. But I think that you yeah, do such a good job on the show of, again, being your authentic self. How does it feel Aww, to be now on your second season? You are legally speaking a friend of, but you feel like you've already mm-hmm, become a fabric of the show. Have you heard any rumblings about getting a snowflake? Or is it sort of like you're just taking it a day at a time?
I'm taking it a day at a time. I was telling someone this the other day on a podcast. I cared for half a day. I really did. I was in New York for rehearsals and I saw it when everyone else saw it. I didn't know until it came out and I was so bummed. I mean, I was so bummed. But then, you know, like I just did my rehearsal. I mean, by half the day, I'm like, I leaned into it and I was just like, okay, This is actually totally fine. As long as I don't feel excluded, like, and I'm not being excluded. I'm going to BravoCon. I'm doing an interview. You know, I don't care what the title is. It doesn't matter. So I leaned in and I did. I walked around the Wicked. I was going to see Wicked. And so I did a TikTok out in front. It was just like, when I'm a snowflake, once I prove my worth. Did you see that?
Yes, I saw that.
It was great. So my producer and I did that together. He filmed me and it was so funny.
I don't want you to ever stop doing great, those types of videos. The video of you singing Abracadabra down the escalator, I'm telling you, it's gold. It's gold.
Thank you. I really do like to have fun. You have to be in the right mood for that, you know?
Of course.
You have to
but
be
it's also
caffeinated
like
enough.
Caffeinated and listen, as I love that you are a Wicked stan. Are you somebody who has, now that you're doing this cabaret, are you someone who does have dreams, aspirations of getting back into doing like full-fledged musical theater? Like if someone was offering you a Broadway contract, would you be like, absolutely? Or do you feel like that's a part of your past?
Oh, hell yeah. Definitely. Like I want to be Madeline Ashton. It's extremely vocally challenging.
Yes, it is. But
like, but so tell
Brittany,
me, what would you do to me aesthetically? A lift, a tuck, a freeze, a suck, some filler in the chin. No, really, tell me, Ernest, if you had your way with me medically, are we talking face, chest, thighs, breasts? Oh gosh, I don't know where to begin. You know, I mean,
I could literally,
just,
I feel like I could, I want to be in the audience right now seeing you in full costume doing that. So I saw Death Becomes Her and I think vocally they have set those women up for a throat nodes. Of nodes, full, just the girthiest nodes you can think of. But also you would be, you would be genius in Death Becomes Her. Okay, we're going to manifest either a Death Becomes yes. Her moment. We're going to manifest. I mean, you said in another interview that you love Erika Jane or you would want to maybe partner with her. I think maybe if you were doing a Chicago moment, I think they would be very smart to cast you in that. I see a lot of fun opportunities for you on the Grey White Way.
I mean, that's not out of the cards. I was just watching Roxy Hart last night. I guess for research, someone else was asking me that. And I mean, I watched Renee Zellweger do it. I haven't seen any live Erika Jane Roxy Harts. Have you? But Renee Zellweger was like, she was insane.
Oh my God,
yeah. She's so good. Perfect. But yeah, that I could do that. Yeah, that would be a lot less vocally challenging and just as much fun. You know, like there's dancing in it, where there's dancing and I would get to use my dance degree, you know?
So you have dancing training as well. Jesus, come on, triple threat.
Well, I mean, at BYU, which is where I graduated there, it's a triple major. It's music. You have to get a full music degree, a full dance degree, ballet, everything, and then a full theater degree. So it's really robust, and people that exit the program, you know, are expected to excel in all three. And it's a really rigorous audition process to get in. And so I have a dance.
No, that's amazing. I want to ask you sort of an interesting side question, because BYU, I think that you're the Mormon of it all. Mormonism of it all, I think, is sort of interesting. I have met many a Mormon or ex-Mormon gay person, and I feel that there's a specific experience about being gay in the Mormon church. Obviously, it can be incredibly difficult. I think Mormonism sort of projects the idea of what perfection and about sort of traditional families. BYU is a Mormon university, yes?
Yes.
So were you in the theater program, were you surrounded by a lot of, you were surrounded by a lot of gay guys, because that is what is, that's who's doing musical theater, and some straights, and we support their journeys. However, what do you have, did you have any sort of one-on-one or first person experiences with the gays in your program that were sort of like dealing with their place in the church?
That is a really good question. No, come to think of it, because everyone was in the closet. I can't think of one person that was out of the closet, because you, at that time, you would be kicked out.
Yeah.
You couldn't be out of the closet. And they were doing all, not they, meaning the church or the school, but in the world, people were doing crazy things like shock treatment. And, you know, like, I mean, it was a dark time to be gay.
Do you think that's still happening in the Mormon church?
No. I think, thankfully, like, they've come a long way. I mean, they're really beautifully accepting and, you know, not tolerant isn't the right word, because it's more than that. Tolerant. Right. But accepting. And there's a lot of people. And I feel like that's the message that I'm here to spread, is just that you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to follow. You don't have to like every item on the menu to still have a favorite restaurant. Hmm. And you can go partake of the restaurant and pick and choose. And it's not ideal. Like, culturally, it's still not very acceptable, but I'm the living proof and a living example, hopefully, that you can partake and you can give back without subscribing to every single item, you know, every single
that makes so much sense
of the religion.
Well, I think the point that you're getting at that I really appreciate is that there is a place for everyone. And I think that I grew up being a pretty religious Jewish person. Like, I was bar mitzvahed. We ate kosher growing up. I went to a Jewish preschool. I and the thing is, I'm still very proud to be Jewish, and that's a big part of my identity, but I'm also not ordering every single thing off the menu. Like, I did not fast this year. For Yom Kippur, I don't do the whole Passover thing, because I just, you know, it doesn't feel like a part of my religious experience, but I still call myself a Jewish person, and I still love being a gay ass Jew. But you're saying that, you know, you're still a part of the Mormon church, but you don't need to sort of agree with every single thing that they have dictated when it comes to whether it's queerness or otherwise.
Exactly. And the church has really come a long way. Again, all of the people don't necessarily agree. So culturally, it's still a little judgy, but the church has shifted so much. The leadership of the church has become so inclusive. Everyone is welcome. We love everyone. Everyone is welcome. That it trickles down to the members. And I'm the perfect example of that. And I've had so many people, and because people are like, why are you showing all the sides of you? Like, you drink on the show. And I'm like, you know, I considered not, but interestingly, I've had so many people DM me and reach out to me saying, hey, you've made me want to come back to church. Thank you for being exactly who you are out loud, because I realize I don't have to believe everything necessarily or live a certain way perfectly to, again, give and receive in this way.
Yeah. I completely understand that. Do you have any sort of advice? I mean, there are people that I do think are understandably felt burned by any religious institution, whether it's Mormonism or otherwise. Do you have any advice for people that, let's just say, like, a gay person that went to BYU, it was, they would have been kicked out if they had been honest about who they were. Do you have any advice for them as a way to sort of heal the part of them that felt that was, that they were wrong? Do you think there's anything that they can do that can make them not feel that an entire institution has felt that their life is illegal? Like, how do you think we should reconcile that as growing up in a place that was telling us that we were wrong?
Oh, that's so hard. And I've been there too with other things. I've been shamed and mocked and bullied about certain things. So I would just say, look back on the experience and change, frame it so that it's the people, not, it's not you. It's the people that were, had very limiting beliefs that, that caused this. It's not the doctor necessarily. It's not, you know, it's not the organization. And give it another try. I'm a firm believer in, you know, coming back to your roots, the healing aspect of that, and letting people love you. Let people love you.
Well, I just, I bring up therapy a lot because it's really my girl. And what I recently heard from my therapist was how we need to listen to and think about our own strengths and not our own weaknesses. And I feel like a lot of people who've been told that they're less than only listen to what is wrong with them, quote unquote, what our weaknesses are, what our issues are. And I think if we actually try to, like you say, reframe and think about the people that do love us and the things that we love about ourselves, if we actually go from a place of abundance, it allows us to sort of heal the part of us that was told that we weren't enough. And I think that you, in so many ways, have clearly done that for yourself, because you're dealing with, whether it's Bronwyn and Watch What Happens shitting on you or people in the press, whatever it is, you're still pushing on.
Hey, gay ass girlies, I just read a romance horror book that I think you'd be absolutely obsessed with. Listen to this. It's called House of Rain by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And at first I was nervous it would be too scary, but y'all, it's scary and horny. And as a newly self-identified slut, I feel seen. Also, it takes place on a remote island in the Pacific Northwest, which I think the Pacific Northwest canonically has the hottest people. So if that doesn't make you squirt, babe, I don't know what will. Also, the book has so many gay-ass themes. I'm talking family drama, there's rumors, manipulation, and again, it's horny as hell. Now, the writing is also so good that it moves real fast and there's kink in it, and you will not be able to put this down. Harley LaRue is a queer writer who gets it. You can find House of Rain by Harley LaRue wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. The gorgeous deluxe hardcover first printing is only available for a limited time, so grab yours before they are gone, babe.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And I think another way that you have shown your authenticity that I appreciate is you are a bit of a flirt, Brittany Bateman. And I love that. In fact, on this recent episode where you're on, that no one can fault you for flirting with Captain Jason. I find him to be one of the hottest men on Bravo, and I would absolutely have flirted the same way.
And Joao
is gorgeous as well.
Okay, before you continue, I have to tell you something super cute. I just have to pause you. Don't forget what you think.
Please, please.
My dad's in the other room, and he just gave me this cute sticky note like that says BYU has gay clubs. They do. I forgot to say that.
Okay, the fact that your dad is is now a part of this interview, I want to thank him. So BYU has gay clubs now. Shout out.
It does right now. They have gay clubs right now.
I believe. Okay, look at that. We'll tell your dad.
Look
thank
at the
you
progress. Look at the look thanks, at the Dad. I love you.
Yeah, we love your dad. And come on, Ally.
Continue.
Well, speaking of older men that we love,
yes.
Well, I mean, Jason's daddy. I mean, you know, older with all respect.
Yeah.
Do you find that the idea of you being told you have high body count hair and the fact that you're flirting with Jason, like, does that, like, are you a proud flirt or is it something that you would like to be more hidden?
Well, I don't think I'm a flirt at all. That's what's so funny. I guess watching back, I guess I am a flirt. But
I just saw myself in you when you were doing that. I was like, that's me. And I find I'm pretty flirty.
Okay, good. Did you see the little tutorial I did on the book that I wrote of, you know, basically dating?
Oh,
dating
I,
club? Did you see
I did
that
not
on
see that. I did not see that. And you need to give us the...
I wrote a
give
book us... called Dating Fight Club.
Hot.
And yeah, and I haven't published it yet. I haven't released it yet, but Bravo did this little mini tutorial, like 5 minutes or whatever, about like dating is discipline, ladies. You drop the handkerchief, the proverbial handkerchief, and then if the correct suitor wants to pick it up, they'll pick it up, but do not flirt. So it's so funny that like, I'm like, hi, you know, can you give me a tour of the cab? You know, can you show me how to run the boat? I had no idea I was that flirty because I'm such a hypocrite. I am
well,
the
you
biggest
know what?
Hypocrite.
I celebrate it. Like we celebrate. In fact, on the Substack for this podcast, we have episodes that we talk about the ways we like to flirt. And I think that the word
amazing.
Slut has been, I'm not calling you a slut, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
Cushion this. But the word slut has been weaponized in many ways. And I think that we here at That's a Gay Ass Podcast like to use the word slut as a celebration. So the fact when you were told that you have high body count hair and you were seeing it as an insult, which I understand. And I think we have really reclaimed here the idea of being a flirt and a slut because it's like, why not live your life full of bliss? Like I am a married gay man who loves my husband deeply and he loves me and he knows that I can flirt and that is a great part of being a human being and there ain't nothing wrong with that.
I love that. Whatever works for people, if you're not hurting someone, if you're not hurting other people and whatever you want to do that makes you happy, you should be doing exactly that.
Well,
that's my philosophy on life.
Yeah. And it seems to be that you're living it now. I mean, that I know you've said in recent interviews, in fact, you told Bravo recently when it comes to Jared that you are always going to be friends. Your official title is friends.
Right.
I'm assuming just a quick check in. We're recording this November 10th. Are we still friends?
Well, that's a tricky question, but because you're the first that's going to get the tea. No, we're not back together. There's no announcement, but we're currently not friends, but I'm sure that we will be in a few days from now. Ask me in a couple days and I'm sure we'll be friends again. But yeah,
well, when I tell you
tiff,
you did a tip. I don't want to ask about specifics, but
well,
did the
can
tiff
I pause
any...
you right there and just back up to a question? Okay, don't forget what you're going to say, but I want to say the only part about the high body countness of it all that hurts my feelings is the idea that I am somehow just unilaterally choosing men over my kids, and that is so distasteful to me that. Everyone has this surface level idea of me that I would rather flirt and catch a man than pay attention to my own children. That's the only part of it that hurts. It hurts so deeply. It's not true. And I really hope that everyone gets to see a deeper, more layered, nuanced, accurate version of what happened. I don't have any control over that. But that's the only part that hurts. Okay, skipping back to Jared.
Well,
I
now I want to respond to that too, because I think that you're really, it's so brave to put that part of your life on a show, first of all. And I think that it can only be incredibly hurtful to have people question your parenting because parenting is one of the most personal things to anybody. And so
and it's the most important job on planet Earth.
Totally. And I completely validate that. I think that there's a testament to you as a parent in seeing your daughter in that scene, the way that she speaks about her feelings. Sure. Is it about your relationship and it's very tough? Absolutely. But the way that she can communicate her feelings to you and feel safe to do so and the way that you respond to her, yes, have I had issues with my parents and we've worked through it? Yeah, that's the part of the human experience. So I think that you putting that out there is, yes, opening yourself up to people saying really crazy shit, but it's also, you clearly are an amazing parent because of the way that your daughter was able to speak her needs out to you.
Oh my gosh, that makes me cry. Thank you. I'm really appreciating being seen right now.
That
makes me seriously get emotional because it's so important to me. I don't care what anyone else thinks about me in any other department. They could think I'm the biggest idiot or the worst dresser or the craziest or thirstiest. I don't care. But to me, the thing I am most proud of is my daughters. And there's no more important job on the planet, like I just said. And I really am a really, really good mom. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom on every field trip. And I volunteered in class every week and we went through some rough times, but hopefully people can understand.
That's the only thing
I care about, what people think of me. That's it.
Well, I do look forward to us seeing more of that play out in this season. And I know that you've talked about how we're going to get a fuller experience of that story. And again, I just want to reiterate that every single person, I think even listening to this, has had moments with their own parents that have been incredibly difficult, because we don't often talk about how hard it is to be an adult with parents. Is it a huge privilege? Yeah. Yes. I don't take for granted one single day that I have my parents. I know the people have lost theirs, and it's, you know, an undescribable loss. But I think on the other side of it, we don't often talk about how to have a strong relationship as adults with our parents, because there are so many parts of our childhoods that maybe we wish had gone differently. But the true sign of strength is looking at your parent and saying, this is what I need, and going through the tough times, much like you were doing with your kids. And so I applaud it. I think it's, again, a sign of your being a good parent, because the bad parent would pretend it never happened and leave and brush it under the rug. And you're actually leaning into the difficulty. And that is a lot harder, and a much better parent.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that so much.
Of course. Well, I think it's, again, that's why the Jared of it all. It's like you are clearly changing patterns, and you're, you know, whatever happens with this TIFF is what happens with this TIFF. Again, respecting the privacy of it all, but did the TIFF have anything to do with Bravo, like the show, or was it separate?
No, it was separate. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's good then.
Yeah. Like, he was thinking about coming to BravoCon, and I'm like, babe, like, you really think that's a good idea? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the temperature is on him in the Bravoverse these days.
Oh, I think people would prefer to see you shine alone without him at BravoCon. That's my take as someone who now is a new friend of yours. That's my take, is people, I think what you're doing is listening to your gut, and I encourage you to do so, because I think people want to see Brittany and not him. That's just my take.
Yeah. No, okay, good to know. Then yeah. I will discourage it if we become friends again.
Yeah. And listen, I'm always here if you need a sounding board, because I think it's, again, we as people, whether we're like queer or otherwise, I think it's a huge lesson is to listen to our guts and knowing what feels right and what feels good within our true selves. And I think that, you know, relationships, whether it's with partners or parents or children, it's all incredibly difficult. And I think that we just have to continue to honor what is right and feels good to for us. And so I'm excited for you to focus on yourself and your relationship with your kids, and, you know, continue slaying.
Do you want to get back to that question though? Because I totally usurped our direction.
Were we talking about Captain Jason?
Mm-mm.
What were we talking about?
We're talking about Jared, but I was still stuck in the previous.
I think we handled the Jared stuff. Yeah, okay, I think we killed it.
We can talk about Captain Jason.
Oh my God. Well, I just love a hairy chest, and I love a man in a uniform. I love a man in charge, a man with like a percentage more of power than me. I'm like, I'm like salivating.
Same.
See, we have the same taste in men. Mm.
And people think I'm such a ditz for saying, like, do you actually run the ship? But to me, that's a valid question. I don't know.
Also, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know what's happening. Exactly. You don't know how the sausage is made.
Exactly. And I really wanted to know. Inquiring minds. So
yeah, we can't blame you for being curious. Is Captain Jason, do we know if he's single or taken? What's going on with him?
I have no idea. I mean, we barely just became friends on Instagram, like, you know, following each other, just barely. And I think he texted me or he DM'd me saying, great episode. And I wrote back, thanks.
That's where
it began and ended. And then I'm excited to see him though. Not that I expect anything, but yeah, it'll be really fun to see him not on the ship.
Oh,
when
I'm
we're
sure.
screaming at each other. I felt so bad for him.
Yeah, well, like, people were pissed that
I've never seen this before.
Yeah, people were pissed that he came out and the fighting continued and nobody sort of acknowledged his presence. People really got fired up about that.
They did, and I feel bad. I mean, we were rude that way, you know, like but none of us were very aware. I mean, none of us were aware at all. Like, we were all too consumed in the anger of whatever moment that was. But I'm excited to see Joao, too. He and I were friends. God,
yeah.
He and I became friends from there.
Bravo knows how to pick them. They really do.
Yeah.
Listen, I do want to get into a couple of quick fire questions. Since you are such a theater queen, are you going to be seeing Wicked for Good in theaters? Is a very controversial question.
How is that a controversial question?
It's not. I was just sort of flying. Am I
missing something here? No, are you kidding? Like, the first Wicked that came out last year, I had on loop. I just played it on loop because, I mean, it was like the wallpaper for my life. If you can imagine, I just wanted to live in that movie and eat, sleep, and breathe the cinematography, the production value, the camera angles, the props. Can we talk about the set that was built?
Oh my God.
Not to mention that they were either shot mic'd or lavved or both, and were singing live in everything. I can't stand enough. Okay, let's talk about Ariana's choreography. Like, that high kick she did in the hall, I was like, is that AI? No. She can actually just really dance like that.
No, I love that they're casting real singers in these roles. And I think that it's, the fact that you have such a great voice and are leaning into it, I think is so important, because I'm not going to make you say anything sassy about some of the other singers on Bravo. And I do say singers lightly. I just think that it's so refreshing to hear somebody who can really navigate a belt and who can it's so refreshing to hear that voce, Brittany.
I was gonna be done with it for good. I really didn't expect to even ever pull that out of the hat again. I thought I was a developer and I'm in real estate now and this is actual money being made, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought I was leaving that all in the past. And then a producer in New York reached out to me when they heard me sing, which is Rapunzel, and Into the Woods. And I didn't even realize I was singing it on the ski slope. And the next thing you know, I'm doing a show in New York. But sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's a great segue, because I want to talk about the show for a second. You are going to be, is the rumor true that you had to add a second night because you sold so many tickets for the first one?
We sold out the first night within like 48 hours. And then we opened up probably a few more tickets that first night, like a section of the theater that wasn't open before. We opened it up and we have one more ticket left. So if you want to come, I think there literally is one more ticket. We opened it up anyway. And I think there's like 10 more tickets the second night now.
Well, there's a hunger for it. I mean, can you give us any sort of peek into just like, as knowing that we are theater gays who love musical theater, is there any sort of like, are you going to give us a Rapunzel moment? Are you going to do a throwback to Miss Saigon? Are you going to do a Glinda? Like, is there any sort of musical theater reference you can give us that will be included?
Oh gosh. Well, it's called What About Me for a reason, because it goes through my history, how I got started in a musical family. My mom and dad literally met in a battle of the bands in Park City, Utah. They were both going to BYU, formed their own band. I started singing with them in their band when I was 4. My mom taught me how to do an arpeggio in the crib. La, 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 la. You know what I mean? Like, I was 9 months old and I sang way before I could even talk. So we sort of go through the history. There may be a wicked moment.
Yes.
There may, I can't tell you if it's Galinda or Elphaba yet. Yes. There may be some smash moments. There may be, there may be a Death Becomes Her moment.
Oh my God. Listen, you are giving, so cute. You are giving the gays what they want. When you gave me a whole Death Becomes Her moment before, I don't even have to, Nathaniel's off camera. I'm sure he was kicking his heels. All the gays watching this, any moment you give us. Yeah, truly.
Dorothy.
Fully. Yeah. I know. I'm so thrilled that you are putting your voice back onto a stage because, you know, the, I think musical theater is such a difficult industry. And so you were able to book work as an actor and do the grind of traveling the country, but to come back all these years later, I think it's really special. And I did musical theater as a performer, professionally for a few years after college.
What?
And I,
what did you do? Yeah. Tell me.
I toured as Buddy the Elf and Elf the Musical. That's my claim to fame.
Stop it. You did not.
Yeah. And I loved it. And it was very cool. And it was also, talk about, you know, like the Death Becomes Her voices of it all. It's hard on the body. It's hard on the voice. You make no money. And so I've tried, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make my millions elsewhere. And then maybe I'll be a Brittany Bateman and pull it out of the old closet or, you know, make my TV money. And then, do Jesse Tyler Ferguson, Neil Patrick Harris route, and then go back to Broadway. So we'll see. We'll see what's in our futures. But listen, Brittany, I do have some important things to do before we round out this interview.
Okay.
My final question for you is, on That's a Gay Ass podcast, we ask about character actresses. And that question is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
I have two very, very opposites.
Great.
So Kristen Wiig is very low-key. She is just herself in every movie and endearing. So she's not like, look at me, but she's so just pure. And I love her. And I got to meet her at the Las Culturistas Awards backstage.
Huge.
And she is just as nice as you would expect. And the other one is the exact opposite, but also just as kind and nice, which is important to me. It's Renee Rapp. Her portrayal of why am I drawing a blank? Mean Girls.
Oh, Regina George.
Regina George. Her portrayal of Regina. My name is Regina George. You know, I mean, just like you just did, like just
and yummy. And massive deal. Yeah, she's.
Yes.
Renee Rapp is. You know what? You've got incredible taste in both answers. Kristen Wiig, I think, is a comedic genius, and she is just like the fact that you can say you met her backstage and she was very nice is huge, because I, you know, am devastated if I hear that one of my favorites is a Cuntosaurus Rex off screen. But I think that
there were some that were not that nice. I was surprised.
I'm sure. Well, there's a lot of Renee big personalities.
Renee was backstage too, as she doesn't know me from Adam. Kind as can be. I mean, absolutely. That which made me love her that much more.
Oh, yeah.
And there were some other people backstage that just were a little too good for their britches, like a little too big for their britches.
I hate that.
I hate that.
I think when someone told me that fame just magnifies who people are. And I think that probably what you experienced backstage is probably people who already had that seed, and then the spotlight made them maybe feel. And it really is a bummer to see, because like, you, no matter how many followers or credits you have, like no one gives, like at the end of the day, who gives a shit? Like, you're putting your pants on, you know, whatever they say. But I think
really put both legs on at the same time. So
exactly. Brittany Bateman, your answers, your energy, your presence has been such an amazing part of my day. And I am just so thrilled that we were able to connect and chat about, yes, Housewives, yes, Broadway. But I'm so looking forward to more and more people seeing your brilliance and seeing your show. Can you tell these listeners where to follow you and anything else you would like for them to know?
Oh, I love you, first of all. I love you. I love your accents. I love your energy. And yes, everyone can follow me on Instagram or TikTok, Brittany Bateman. But it's B-R-I-T-A-N-I, Bateman.
All right, y'all.
I would love, and I'm really good about my messages. If people reach out to me, I'm really good about answering my messages on Instagram.
Okay, well, I will definitely be DMing you, and we will be having Kiki's on the Instagram chats, but also one day I will be seeing you live at either a cabaret. I'll be letting you know when my husband will be at your show.
Yes,
and regardless, I will continue to enjoy watching your star rise, and for you to understandably make it all about you, because you deserve.
Oh, you're so cute. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review for the podcast wherever you listen, or just drop a comment on YouTube if you're watching us there. There is more to watch on Substack, and this week's guest is next level hot and also has a crazy story. His name is Colin Braun. He's a hot, hairy divorcee who fled the United States of America after Trump was elected and is now surrounded by uncut hog in Dublin. So go to substack.com/@EricWills to watch that bonus episode with like 10s, 20s, 30s of other gorgeous episodes as well. I love you so much. Stay gay. Go see Britney's cabaret in New York if you're there early December. And I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and follow the Instagram at Gay Ass Podcast. For more gay assery, the real girlies are over on Substack, where you get bonus episodes every single week and live chats with me and other gay ass guests. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.